The following is a best of rebroadcast on WGNS. No phone calls will be taken during the show. This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. We want to let you know that this part of Shirley Ferris Jones's show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means At Home Care is hands-on, involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care, they provide top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639. Internet, athomecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639. At Home Care, your number one source for the best care in Middle Tennessee. How you doing, Shirley?
I'm doing good, Truman. The sun is shining. Life is good.
You've been traveling all over, and of all places you went to was up in the New England area.
We got out of there in a good time, but boy, did we have an awesome trip. We did a ride in a biplane over the coast of Maine and Acadia National Park that, hey, I would recommend anybody to do it. Jerry had always wanted to do that, and so I thought, all right, if he's brave enough to do it, so am I. And so we did, and it was truly an awesome experience. But we saw some gorgeous country. We went to Mount Washington. That was an experience, too. Mm-hmm. That is the site in the United States of the highest wind ever. It was pretty windy when we were up there, probably in excess of 130 miles, I think, and a blizzard. But this was in October, so we got out of there in a good time. But it was a great, there's just so much to see and do in this big old world.
And you did a lot of it by air, which is amazing.
Well, we drove. I mean, we covered about 4,500 miles, but the flight over Acadia and seeing the coast of Maine from the air was really an experience. It was just gorgeous. We spent a week in Bar Harbor, and we just met some lovely people and talked to some really interesting folks. Met a guy who was walking the entire Appalachian Trail, and he began his journey last March in Georgia, and it was going to conclude in Maine in about a couple of weeks after we saw him. So I thought, boy, that he and his dog. And that was it was interesting talking to him. I don't think at this point in my life I would be brave enough to take on something like that. But it was, you know, it's something he'll always remember.
He was in his 20s. Mm-hmm. And didn't you say he stayed in one motel one night?
He said he had stayed in one motel that he had eaten dinner and he wasn't feeling well, and he said he was, you know, really sick, and he thought, boy, what if I had to go to the hospital or something? So he and his dog stayed in a motel that one night, and he said, you know, that was a beautiful night. He said he really hated to miss the camping experience, but his dog had a little backpack that had all of the, you know, the dog food and the blanket and everything the dog needed, and he had a big backpack, and he was telling me that he had a portable shower. Now, I'm not sure how you take your portable shower. Where does the water come from?
But I would say it's been quite an experience talking to him downwind.
Definitely downwind. I almost lost the taste for my hot chocolate during the course of our discussion, but I made a picture of him, and one picture's worth 1,000 words.
Yes.
But he, you know, he was a very intelligent young man, and this was quite an adventure, and he and his dog. I couldn't see my little papillons making that journey.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about history this morning, and a lot of it would be probably centered on the Battle of Stones River, because we're right at the 150th anniversary.
We are. Well, you know, I was just thinking a second ago, as I made the statement, life is good.
Yeah.
My life is very good, and I'm very grateful for that. 150 years ago, life was pretty good at this time of year for the citizens of Murfreesboro, too. In fact, as Thanksgiving approached, the local townsfolks had a lot more to be thankful for than they might have ever thought possible a few months prior. Mm-hmm. You know, 1862 had been an interesting year for Murfreesboro. We began the year, of course, under Confederate rule. By early March, we were under federal rule, have yet to surrender. We're a captured town. July changed that, July 13th, with Bedford Forest Raid. So by July, most of the Yankee soldiers were gone from the town. So we were under nobody's rule. Then by September, you could see the little movement of Confederate forces heading back this way. The first Confederate forces were from a North Carolina cavalry unit, and they began to arrive around the 1st of November. And, boy, this was, you know, good news. Bedford Forrest and John Hunt Morgan were both in the area harassing any Yankees that might venture this way from Nashville.
Yankee was not a fond term used back then.
I think there was another adjective used in front of it.
Kind of lighten it up a little bit, huh?
Yeah. it rhymed with yam. But things were going really good. And, you know, this was a sense of well-being for the townsfolk. They knew that this wasn't going to last in all probability. They could hope that it would, but the facts didn't point to that in that direction. But, my golly, they were going to enjoy it while they could. You know, carpe diem. Let's seize the day. And we had the big wedding that was coming up in December of Maddie Reedy and John Hunt Morgan. In fact, that December the 14th of 1862 will mark the 150th anniversary of that.
It's amazing.
I did a program for a group in Tullahoma on Maddie Reedy, on Murfreesboro's own Southern Belle, on Tuesday night, and she was really an extraordinary young woman.
Do you think that the people here at that particular time, did they have an inkling at all about what the dangers were around them and how their lives would be changed?
They had to surmise, but you know, until you've actually been there, done that, until the horrors of a war occur in your own backyard, there's no way to imagine what awaits you. You know, the deprivations, the horrors, the suffering, nobody can envision that. And some things are just too bad to even think about.
In some ways, though, from your accounts that I've read and some others, it was business as usual.
It was.
They really weren't doing many things that were different.
It was business as usual. Things were kind of high. There was no communication with Nashville during this time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there were some inconveniences, and there were some shortages of things. But for the most part, I mean, life went on, you know, as it had been. And you can only, you know, when you know what lurks around the corner, what the possibilities are, you don't want to think about that. You just want to enjoy the good times and hope that the bad things that could happen don't.
You're kind of caught up in not as much the political thing. You're still trying to go on and live your lives. And the soldiers are out there. They're fighting for a cause, but probably not aware of all of the political things that are going on because they're out there on the front, and that's a normal thing. But, you know, I'm not too sure anybody was even thinking how their lives were going to change no matter how the war ended. Was that part of the...
I think some people probably could envision what might happen, but I don't think the extent of how their lives would change. You know, a whole aristocratic society was gone with the wind, in a sense. And I don't think, and you know, fortunes were lost. They would never see loved ones again, or the loved ones they did see might be missing limbs, or, you know, heaven, who knows what kind of shape they would be in. After Maddie and John were married, and then following the Battle of Stones River, when she left Murfreesboro in early January of 1863, she wouldn't see her parents again until after the war, July of 1865. Her sister, Emma Cheatham, would die during that time. And, so many other relatives and everything would be gone. And everything, her whole way of life that she had known and enjoyed, was changed forever. Mm-hmm. Fortunes were lost, and you know, after the war, times were really, really hard for the townsfolk, and so it was there was just no way for people to know what was awaiting them, and what 1863, 64, 65 from then on would bring. So they were just taking it a day at a time. One thing that I have noticed, the soldiers who participated in the war, they knew this was a moment in history. They kept diaries, whether it was in the form of letters or journals, whatever. And some of them did it as a sense of, you know, to relieve the boredom, the everyday boredom. Mm-hmm. After the war, they didn't want to talk about it. And if you really want to get a true insight as to the day-to-day life after the war, I've had to rely on women's diaries, mm-hmm. and there are very, very few of them. Many of them did not survive, or letters that women wrote. So many women did not have the means, whether they were literate or illiterate, whether they had pencil and paper, whether they had the time and mm-hmm. the energy. But women were the ones who documented how hard life was and what it was really like after the war.
These people, our ancestors that were here in the South, they were used to having hard lives. They built things with their hands from the ground floor up. They lived in some of the harshest times, and they survived. They were very strong-willed people. And my thoughts are, when you think back on it, is they did not surrender here. They
Never.
Were very tough, very strong-willed. And I think sometimes when you're talking about the men did not like to talk about what went on during the war, I think a lot of that is they did not want to be beaten down by anything. They did not want to lose.
And
I think that they carried that on.
But, you know, I think the horrors that they experienced, losing their friends, their buddies. Mm-hmm. My dad wouldn't talk about World War II.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when he came back from World War II, I was a little kid, but even when I was in high school, I had questions, and Daddy didn't want to talk about it. He told me one story about one of his best buddies. There were two other guys and Daddy who had been best buddies, you know, from the time that they went through boot camp and mm-hmm. then went to the European theater, the Battle of the Bulge, crossing the Rhine River, and all that. And even after Germany had surrendered, and one of Daddy's buddies from Indiana, I can't recall his name right now, but he was shot by a little kid, a little German sniper, in a tree. Mm-hmm. And the war was over, and this guy died in Daddy's arms. And I guess I was probably a teenager before Daddy would even talk about that. Mm-hmm. And Daddy had corresponded with this man's family. And Mother told me a little bit, but Daddy wouldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it was just a terrible, terrible time. So I don't know if that's true with men in all wars. I can't say, you know.
It's all different.
Uh-huh.
Some people, they're able to, once they're acclimated back into civilian life, they want it to go away.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want
it
to ever
it.
Be around. But then there's others that it's kind of therapy to talk about.
It looks
about
like it would be therapeutic, you know, to maybe not talk with your family if you didn't want to. But, mm-hmm. you know, it looks like it would be a very therapeutic thing, mm-hmm. you know, to not to revisit those times and just not have it stored in the back of your subconscious and, mm. you know, manifest itself in ways that might be damaging to, you know, harmful to the person. I don't know. I think it's so sad that there are so many veterans who come home from war with, you
it
know,
is.
Post-traumatic it distress
is.
And, you know, I mean, that needs to be recognized and dealt with. It needs to be a top priority, I think. But men who give so much should not have to have experiences like that.
Since you mentioned that, I want to mention Leanne Thompson is doing this wonderful program and service for our wounded veterans,
Wounded Warriors.
Yes, and they have boxes out in a lot of business. They've got them here at WGNS, and people in the community are asked to send Christmas cards and thank you notes to all of those veterans for the price that they have paid. And if people would love I would ask everybody out there to get involved with it, and then just the cards, and then what they do is they will take the cards and then they will send them to the individuals that they have listed, and they say it does such a wonderful thing for the morale of all of those
just
people.
Just that connect with home.
Yes,
Just that connect. I think that's a wonderful thing. My DAR chapter has done that. And, you know, signed cards and everything. And especially, you know, you think of all the wounded warriors in hospitals, and they may have family who can visit and be there with them, and they may not. Mm. And for anybody to be alone, to not have that connection with the outside world, I think it's just heartbreaking, and it is totally unacceptable. We are better people than that.
I need to apologize. I said Leanne Thompson. I think it's Leanne Newton. I don't know why I said that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But we're thinking back during this period again, and we're talking about people that came down here because they had a love of the land. And
they were adventurous, you know?
Yes. So they came down through all types of hardship and established homes here and built them by their own two hands.
My low family did that.
Yeah. And you can see with all the things that they've struggled through to have all this down here and then end up in a war where their property may be taken away from them. It had to be extremely hard on each and every one of them.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, there's a difference between hardship and hard work. Mm-hmm. They were used to hard work, but hardship comes under a different category. Mm-hmm. And but the possibility of losing one's home, I can't think of anything any worse. I mean, you know, this was their heart and soul. What they had invested in the land, that was who they were. And it had to have been a very, very devastating time. I mean, I think it was the women who more or less set the stage, you know, hey, we can't give up. You know, we're going to keep on keeping on. You know, we're going to work hard. And I've read stories. I mean, men worked very hard, too, but so many of them were so war-weary. They were tired. They were sick. They were literally worn out when they came home after the war. And when they left to go to the war, they left women. Well, you know, here it is, babe. Have at it. And I've read women's diaries of them putting the children to bed and then going out and plowing a field by the moonlight in order to try to have a garden, to have food for their children. If they ran out of wood, then, you know, they would cover up the kids with feather beds and everything, and, you know, blankets and everything that they had, trying to keep the kids warm. I mean, now this was, you know, of course, not the more affluent people, but sometimes, you know, people tend to forget about the less affluent. Who suffered more than anybody else.
You see all the movies, and everybody's rich.
Yeah.
They have big plantations.
Not exactly. Not exactly. And, you know, and that's what we tend to forget about the suffering of the lower socioeconomic, you know, folks, the African Americans. Not everybody had a grand plantation and had, you know, servants in waiting and all the goodies, you know, that go with that lifestyle. Yeah, but it was a very difficult time for everybody. I mean, it was a huge shock to the people who were the plantation owners and, you know, the aristocratic South. It was a huge shock to them, but it was an even bigger shock to the lower socioeconomic people who had worked so hard trying, you know, to make a go, trying to survive, and then all of a sudden their chances of survival became harder and you know, lesser to much lesser degree than those on the higher economic scale. So many on the upper end of the scale, they could refugee south, they could leave. Hey, I don't like this, I'm not having a good time, I'm out of here, you know.
Was it the ones that were more affluent, though, that suffered the most?
They
after
the
war
most.
Because they had so much to lose.
They lost the most, absolutely. And they had so much invested in it, you know. And that, yeah, that's very true. Mm-hmm.
You think about it, and if we were in their place, and we're over 150 years ago, and the war is over with, and you're asked to pledge your allegiance back to the Union again, I wonder how tough that would be after going through all the things.
Well, I can give you one example. My great-great-grandfather, Calvin Lowe, who lived in the Big Springs community, fought with the 23rd Tennessee. He was wounded at Shiloh. was sent to the hospital in Corinth in May of 62, and then he was discharged and came back home. In March of 1863, following the Battle of Stones River, some marauding Yankees came to his farm, and they were going...
We're going to have to take a quick break, and we will be right back with Shirley.
The following is a best-of rebroadcast on WGNS. No phone calls will be taken during the show.
It's time. Blue Raiders.
Support your Blue Raiders as they compete for back-to-back Sun Belt Conference titles. Men's and women's basketball combo season tickets are on sale now and start as low as $199. Don't miss a single three-pointer. Score a slam dunk with season tickets today.
Show your true blue. Support your Blue Raiders. Tickets available at GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Go Blue Raiders.
If you want to get some barbecue, I tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock, $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
I'm really impressed.
Websites, SEM, SEO.
Direct mail, too. Yellowbook 360 helps local businesses succeed using internet marketing, social media, mobile, and more.
I trust Yellowbook 360 to do it all.
Now I can focus on running my business while they focus on marketing it.
Put the power of the internet to work for your business. Start by attending a free online marketing seminar with Yellowbook 360. Go to ybseminars.com. That's ybseminars.com.
So, what if you're walking out to your car after work and it's been mashed by a runaway garbage truck? We've got an agent for that. Having your own State Farm agent means having a real person there to help you when things go wrong. So when accidents happen, you've got someone you know who will be there when you need them. I'm Jeannie Allman, and I'm that State Farm agent.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm agent Jeannie Allman at 896-2013.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Shirley Ferris Jones. And this part of her show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. And from the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on to Ridgely Road. We were talking about, still going back about 150 years ago, but, you know, we started talking off the air, and we started talking about something about really people that are a major part of our history already. And it's a worry to me, and I know it's a worry to you, Shirley, that what these people have done for the community and have accomplished. And went to the funeral home last night and had Tommy Smith, and I consider him one of those people that has done so much for the community and made people's lives so much better. We talk about Jack Jolly, all the kids that he's influenced. There's so many of them. And it really, I think about it a lot when I go to the funeral and see those type of people, and I think about what they've done, the footprints that they have left. And it bothers me that two or three generations from now, people will not recognize that at all. You know, there's a few people that you do when you get to be in higher offices and things like that. But sometimes we don't do enough to preserve that history.
You're exactly right. And, you know, recognizing them after they've left us is fine and good and something that should be done, but they need to be recognized while they're here.
Yes,
they need, you know, their story, what they have done, their icons. They have made us who we are today. You know, I look back over my years at MTSU. Dr. Bob Womack was my dear friend, my coffee buddy, my mentor. You know, I love Dr. Bob. He was just such a wonderful human being. Jack Jolly, of course, was he my eighth grade teacher. He was one of the most outstanding role models I think young people could have in this community. Pete Griever, Don Griever's dad, another such a fine human being. Hillary Parker. I could name so many, and I know you can too. But you know, these people are they have shaped who we are. They have given us paths, and you know, we can go back even further. You know, they've given us direction. They've, you know, given us a sense of what's important, what needs to be preserved, what we need to do. And it's just sad to lose some of these. Miss Mary Hall, you know, Ben Hall McFarland.
Yes.
And, you know, so many people like that. And it's easy, you know, to forget, you know, just like you and I are, you know, talking right here, the people that we remember who have shaped our lives, who have helped shape our community and make our community, you know, what it is today. I hope they will never be forgotten. Reckon you and I will be, probably.
Oh, of course. Of course. Now, you will, because you've written all the books about history. So, and you do such a great accounting of it, Shirley.
We'll
get back to the Lowe family in a minute. But reading your books, you put a different perspective on it than almost anybody else. I mean, we have such great writers here. You come more from the feminine side, the lady side. As you look in it, you're able to relate what the ladies were going through back then, and all the hardships, and how they were able to stand tall during some of the toughest times. And then I read Greg's Tucker's books, and they are extremely well written and right on the button.
Greg does a great job. He truly does.
We really get almost a complete historical way of looking at things by having all these great writers right here in Rutherford County. And sometimes I think that the people don't take advantage of that.
Well, you know, not everybody's interested in history.
Everybody should be, because that's why we're here.
Everybody should be, but unfortunately not everybody is. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to reach a certain maturity yourself to be able to appreciate your own heritage. Mm-hmm. And your own heritage is a part of that history. I don't care whether you've grown up and lived in Murfreesboro all your life, or whether you just moved here a few years ago. In some way, you're connected to some historical event. And it's been sad to me, in preservation efforts that I've been involved with over the last 25 years, it's been sad to me, some of Murfreesboro's citizens, some people who've lived here, you know, grown up here just like I have, they've never been to Stones River National Battlefield.
Wow.
I thought, golly, you know, that's unreal. I don't know what they do with their time, but certainly not, they're not, and history's not for everybody. There's a place for everybody in this big old world. But history is such a part of our own destiny. It's part of our own journey, how we got to, you know, to where we are today. And to preserve that which has been entrusted to us, that which has been left to us, I feel we have a moral obligation to. Murfreesboro, in all honesty, has done a lot of things right. There are a lot of things we could have done better. Mm-hmm. And there is a place, I will say and emphasize, that historic preservation and growth can go hand in hand if they're done properly. And heritage tourism brings so many dollars, clean dollars, to Rutherford County. You know, people come in, they visit our special sites and special places, and they spend their money. They fill up with gas. They spend the night. They eat. And then they go away, and we don't have to provide infrastructure or build schools for them. Hey, you can't, you know, those are clean dollars. You can't overlook that. And so we've got a story to tell. Our historic courthouse, one of six antebellum courthouses remaining in the state of Tennessee. And, you know, we've got a story to tell here, and we need to continue to preserve and protect and promote it.
When I go in that courthouse, I think of all the people that have served at the courthouse, the judges, the county commissioners, the mayor, it used to be county executives, and before that it was county judge, of course. And you think about all that.
You think of how many native sons our courthouse has seen go off to war, mm-hmm. many of whom never to return.
That's right.
You know, you think of all the... That courthouse was completed in 1859 at a cost of $50,000. Mm. Just in time to get messed up. But, you know, you think of all that courthouse that grand old dame has witnessed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been the site of happy times. It's been the site of balls and lots of legal proceedings. And, I mean, that courthouse has witnessed so much. So she's a grand old dame and has a story to tell.
And you were talking about all the sites, and some of them bring tourists in and they spend their money. And we do have sites around here that people can stop at, and there's one right off the Manchester Highway.
Frank Fly's place?
No, way beyond that. It's actually just past the county line. I think it's past the county line.
Hoover's.
Right there where the interstate...
Hoover's Gap. Oh,
No. They actually have a memorial.
Oh, the Confederate cemetery up there.
A Confederate memorial.
Yeah.
And I went over there, and I didn't even realize it was there.
I used to ride horses over that.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh, when I was a kid. Uh-huh.
And you can go in, and you just get that feeling, because I had heard, and they have... you can push buttons, and it will tell you some of the things that went on there. And actually, one of the buttons you push, and it plays Dixie. And it still, it brings back memories of that particular area.
The Manchester SCV camp has done a wonderful job in preserving that and taking care of it and everything. And it's a beautiful, beautiful site. True story. A few years back when Dan Whittle was our mutual buddy, who asked me if I knew Maddie Reedy Morgan personally, and mm-hmm. to Dan I will respond, well, she was born in 1840, so, you know, he can do the math. But Dan Whittle was...
He's a great speller, though.
Yeah, phonetic. But Dan was doing an article on the Battle of Hoover's Gap, and mm-hmm. I had written an article, and so we decided on that, and he asked me to go up there with him so he could make some pictures, and we were talking about it. Well, Dan had hip replacement surgery, I believe, or he was having some problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the day before we went, I fell out the back door over my dog's tennis ball that he'd left on the back step, and I didn't know. But anyway, so Dan and I decided we could do this. So here we are. We were much younger then than we are now, and we're hobbling up that hill. I swear it was like two tumble bugs, one pushing and one pulling. Neither mine nor Dan's finer moments, but by golly, we made it too. We made it up the hill.
It's just different standing there.
It is. And the view that you see, and you try to think about, it's like time has stood still in one sense, despite all the hustle and bustle, you know, of the interstate and the roads and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You think about all that. My great-great-grandfather had a store on the old Highway 41. In fact, mm-hmm. my grandfather had a store there, too, before the new highway came through. And after the Battle of Hoover's Gap, or right before that, Yankee soldiers were buying tobacco and all kinds of things from the store,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't pay for it.
They were buying. They weren't buying. They were stealing.
They were buying it. And, you know, yeah, write this down and we'll pay you. Well, they never did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are some accounts receivable left on that one, you
the
can
price
say.
Of war.
Oh, the spoils of war, right.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
All right, now tell me again about the Lowe family.
You were talking about how difficult it was for people, you know, to have to take the oath of allegiance. And
mm-hmm.
this was just one personal story. Well, anyway, meanwhile, back at Big Springs. So following the Battle of Stones River in March of 1863, some men from an Ohio unit were going further and further and further out into the countryside, you know, foraging for whatever they could steal, you know,
mm-hmm.
chickens, horses, apples, you name it. Well, they came to the Lowe farm, and of course Calvin C. Lowe, you know, was a Confederate soldier. He had been discharged because of wounds he received at Shiloh, and there he was, he and his wife and eight children. His wife was pregnant in her seventh month of pregnancy. Well, these Yankee thieving soldiers decided they were going to take Minerva Kelton Lowe's chickens and apples, and
mm-hmm.
she decided they were not. I mean, food supply was in short supply,
mm-hmm.
and so she called them names. She questioned their ancestry, as family legend goes,
mm-hmm.
and asked what kind of thieving folks they were. And so one of the soldiers stabbed her in the stomach in her seventh month of pregnancy.
Mm.
She lived 3 months. The baby lived 3 days. Calvin was arrested and brought to the courthouse. Grand Ole Courthouse witness this. And where, and he didn't know what had happened to his aging father. His father, of course, was in his almost in his late 60s. Mm-hmm. He was at the house too. He didn't know what had happened to his wife. He didn't know what had happened to his other children. And he's in his application for Civil War pension, he said he was forced to take the oath of allegiance to the United States. He added a few expletives that I won't mention on the air. Mm-hmm. And that is in his Civil War pension, you know, how strongly he felt. But he had to get home to his family, so he took the oath in March of 63 to get home to his family and, you know, see what had happened. Well, when he applied for Civil War pension, he told this story, and he included the expletives. Mm-hmm. And he had a rather colorful vocabulary, shall we say. And he had a lawyer, Mr. Murphy, who was helping him mm-hmm. with this application. And in the margin, Mr. Murphy had written, well, he had apologized for Calvin Lowe's profanity, but he said Calvin would not pay him the 25 cents due him for his legal services otherwise.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can see how strongly Calvin Lowe felt about the situation.
You know, there was a lot of looting and things like that, which is normal, I guess, mm-hmm. for some wars. And when that goes on, and say the landowners, when they would try to protect their property, so say if they shot a soldier mm-hmm. that was stealing from them at that point, what was done with the person? What was that consider a legal shooting?
No, they because a captured town had no rights, and in all probability, if you were trying to protect your farm, your land, your horse, whatever, you would probably either be shot or you would be arrested and then hung. They'd mm-hmm. find you guilty, and there the number of hangings. In 1864 is astounding. This is something that Mike Bradley and I uncovered when we were writing Murfreesboro in the Civil War, and I thought, my God, I've never heard of that many hangings. I mean, how many of Murfreesboro citizens were hung mm-hmm. for war crimes? Jeez.
And probably not really committing crimes. A lot of them were just trying to protect their family and their property.
Yeah. In all probability, had Calvin Lowe had a gun, he probably would have shot somebody and been killed himself trying to protect his family.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Scarlett O'Hara got away with it.
She did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe they should have learned a lesson from her.
If only they had known.
While the war was going on, what was the attitude of the civilians here, the homeowners and stuff, while that was happening? That had to have been...
We were a pro-Confederate town, per mm-hmm. se. There were a lot of people who... did what they had to do in order to survive. There were some who did not share that same strong allegiance. Those who had sons, husbands, brothers, fathers fighting for the cause that they considered to be the right one, then, I mean, they were very, you know, they were very loyal. Excuse me. They were very loyal. They were very strong-willed in their approach. Others who... did not share that same attachment to the Confederate cause. They could go either way. Mm-hmm. Another thing I found shocking was a story that I think I shared with you the last time I was here about two of Murfreesboro's young ladies who became engaged to two federal officers. I mean, these girls were in their 20s, and Corinne and Josephine Reeves, and they were engaged to Parkhurst and O.C. Rounds. And O.C. Rounds, I mean, he was a despicable creature, in my opinion. I mean, he was really tough. He was hard on the citizens. He despised, you know, Confederate sympathizers. Mm-hmm. And these two girls, their mother apparently was dead. Their father was Nathan B. Reeves. I've tried to get Richard to claim kinship, but he...
Oh, he won't do it.
But their mother had a boarding house, and this is where mm-hmm. O.C. Rounds was living. And O.C. Rounds... and Corinne were supposed to have been married the night of Forrest Raid on Murfreesboro, July the 13th. Instead, O.C. Rounds got captured under her bed. And for the life of me, now here here's a comparison. Mattie Reedy Morgan became engaged to the dashing, daring cavalryman John Hunt Morgan. Mm-hmm. And these two girls, approximately the same age as Mattie, and they were attractive from the picture I saw of one of them, couldn't find a picture of the other, they became engaged to these fat, middle-aged men of an opposing army. I find that hard to believe.
Well,
but they did. I mean, it's documented. But I mean,
do you think they were scheming they could see some of the things that were going on.
They were opportunists. Yeah. They probably had more chocolate and nylons than anybody in town.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it, I guess. Opportunists. Now, how were they looked upon by the other people there? They were probably very low on the totem pole.
That had to have been. I haven't been able to find any record of that. It, you know, there was nothing in anybody's diaries. You know, Emma Lane. I haven't found anybody commenting on them. You know, like, oh, I despise those two. Mm-hmm. I haven't found anybody who even mentioned them. But they lived in a house on Main Street with their grandmother, who had had a boarding house. And I do know that O.C. Rounds wrote, after he was captured by Forrest and sent to prison, he wrote a letter back to Corinne breaking the engagement. He never came back to Murfreesboro. Parkhurst did return to Murfreesboro, and he and Josephine were married in 1868. Hmm. And they lived in Nashville for a short while, and then she died in the early 1870s. So it's kind of interesting. I'm puzzled by that. I know of no other, not to say it didn't happen, but I know and I have not found in my research any other such occurrences. And you can just imagine. Now, I'm looking at it from, say, Mattie Reedy's perspective. Mm-hmm. And if somebody just right down the street from you is engaged to two enemy officers, ooh.
Well, you think about those times. The war was going on in our territory. And I often think, how in the world could the families not get involved in the war? Because all those soldiers are there trying to protect them and their property and hold the land as much as they can. And here are the people that, in some respects, really don't rise up to the situation.
And there were some who really didn't have the vested interest of, loved ones fighting and for the Confederacy, or, and they just wanted to keep on doing business. They wanted to make amends with either side so that they could continue to sell goods and make money. Mm-hmm. And boy, there were 65 businessmen, and there were some local townspeople who did have sons and brothers and husbands fighting for the Confederacy, and they wrote down the names. John Cedric Spence includes it in his diary of these 65 businessmen who, above all else, wanted to keep on doing business and making money. They were opportunists, too.
Yeah.
So, war brings out the best or the worst. Brought out the best in women, I think. And these never-before-told stories are what I find so appealing. So, to preserve them so that they will not be lost for history, starting with a lot in my own family. But there are so many wonderful stories. Just because you weren't famous didn't mean that, that you weren't noteworthy, that you didn't have a place in history, that you didn't make your mark. Even the role of horses and dogs and the suffering, of the animals after a war. But women certainly rose to the occasion, to do what needed to be done. The citizens of Murfreesboro after the Battle of Stones River were humane. They were decent. They cared for the suffering soldiers on both sides. Mm-hmm. They shared their food, which was in short supply. Mm-hmm. And, there's goodness. There was goodness and decency and humanity. And that's rewarding.
For this country, it was the most horrible war ever.
Oh, a nation at war with itself. What could be worse?
And, of course, we've seen it in other countries. But there's something about Americans that they rise up no matter how bad the situation is. And that's one thing that I think all of us should have great pride in is our ancestry, because that war almost affected every human being in
every
the United
living
States
creature.
One way or the
every
other.
Every living creature.
But it didn't take long for them. It took a while. Mm-hmm. But they did rise up. I mean, the ones that were probably more stubborn than others, that would not sign allegiance and all mm-hmm. those other things. I imagine a lot of them probably headed west or whatever.
To Texas and to Brazil.
Yeah,
some of them left the country.
But look, they still left their footprints. They really did.
They did. And it's sad when people can't accept change, when they can't grow with a changing world. Mm-hmm. And, you look at how the United States has changed. This election brought that into focus, that, hey, this is not, your granddaddy's, you know, your granddaddy's America. Get with the program, folks. I mean, we're a changing nation. The same was true in the Civil War. Sometimes people don't want to accept change. They don't want, certainly they don't do it with dignity. And that's sad, but you know, we are constantly a changing people. We have to accept change. We have to grow with the times and try to be the best that we can be, whether we like it or not. Got to get over it.
Well, we've had people that have come up and took charge during some of the worst of times. Sometimes you just need to hear it from somebody of the mm-hmm. things that you need to do to work together.
To bring out the best yeah. in who we are, you know.
But there's something about Americans that they love their country, they mm-hmm. love the land. They came over here for religious freedoms, a lot of mm-hmm. them did, which is a strong part of our heritage, a very strong part of our heritage. Yet these people, with all that love for the community, for their country, and all these other things, they're very strong individually through their families.
Mm-hmm. They are. And that, there again, that shapes us, who we are, why we are, and, you know, it's a very important part of us, I think.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Shirley Ferris Jones.
The following is a Best Of rebroadcast on WGNS. No phone calls will be taken during the show.
With the cost of college rising every day, there's never been a better time to start saving. That's why the Tennessee Department of Treasury created the new Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program. Visit www.tnstars.com to open an account with as little as $25. If you're a Tennessean and you open an account with at least $50 by December 31st, you get a one-time $50 match from the state. Plus, if you roll over your entire balance from another college savings plan, you'll receive $100 in your account. To learn about the Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program, its investment objectives, risks, and costs, read the official statement available at www.tnstars.com or call toll-free at 855-386-7827. Check with your home state to learn if it offers tax or other benefits for investing in its own 529 plan. Open your Tennessee Stars account online at www.tnstars.com or call toll-free at 855-386-7827. Don't wait. Open your account today.
It's time. Blue Raiders.
Support your Blue Raiders as they compete for back-to-back Sun Belt Conference titles. Men's and women's basketball combo season tickets are on sale now and start as low as $199. Don't miss a single three-pointer. Score a slam dunk with season tickets today.
Show your true blue. Support your Blue Raiders. Tickets available at GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Go Blue Raiders.
So, what if you're walking out to your car after work and it's been mashed by a runaway garbage truck? We've got an agent for that. Having your own State Farm agent means having a real person there to help you when things go wrong. So when accidents happen, you've got someone you know who will be there when you need them. I'm Jeannie Allman, and I'm that State Farm agent.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm agent Jeannie Allman at 896-2013.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
You know, Shirley, every time I have you on the show, the time just flies. It seems like we just started, and now we've only got a couple of minutes left.
Time does fly when you're having fun, and I've had a ball, Truman. Thank you for inviting me.
But the subject is always great. I mean, when we start talking, I'm not in year 2012 anymore. I'm back 150 years
it's
ago.
Easy to jump. Hey, it's easy to take a journey back in time with me.
Yeah, it is. and you know, I enjoy listening to you, and I enjoy reading about your books, too. I mean, about some of the things that were going on during that time. I start reading, and I just kind of get lost in time. And it was, you think about this weather now. Here it is. It's colder than anything in the morning. I mean, it's freezing. And those people back then, they were out in the hostility.
Oh, yeah. I've read, you know, right before the Battle of Stones River, how Pat Claiborne's troops came up and they had, you know, they had to sleep on the cold ground. They couldn't have fires. Many mm-hmm. of them were wet. Their beds were wet. I mean, freezing. Can you imagine that?
No.
And then you think of the men crossing McFadden's ford, holding their guns up, you know, and their clothes wet. I mean, you know, freezing temperatures, it's just they're better men than I am. I'll say that. I just don't know how they could do that. I mean, I guess you got to do what you got to do. But can you imagine wading into a river with below freezing temperatures
and no way to
and
to
no
get
way
warm.
To get warm?
Huh? Yeah.
How any of them survived that alone? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think the casualty list was higher because of the illnesses
and disease. That, disease. Yeah, absolutely. Than the actual battle wounds and everything, but. It was a very, very hard time, and the sacrifices. Well, war brings sacrifices from every participant in every way imaginable. But that what happened right here in our own backyard is something worth remembering, something worth commemorating. There are a lot of activities planned for the commemoration of the Battle of Stones River, and so I would encourage everybody, folks, if you've never been to Stones River, please go. You know. Do yourself a favor. Find out a little bit about the history of what is, you know, right around you. You're probably walking on hallowed ground and don't even know it if you go shopping at the avenues. But just take a moment and reflect back. The men and women of that time deserve it. They deserve to be remembered. They deserve to be honored at this point in time. And the 150th anniversary is certainly a good opportunity to do it.
And a good way to educate yourself would be to go over to the Rutherford County Historical Society, where there are a number of factual books that will depict what was going on during
absolutely
that time.
And to give a true feel of what it really was like for the people, not just the soldiers, but what it was like for every living creature, for every man, woman, child, black or white, young or old. What about the horses and dogs? A couple of articles that I wrote, one on horses, on gallant steeds and noble beast of burden, and then in Man's Best Friend Went to War Too. I have really had a lot of comments about that. People never thought about how the animals suffered. Well, I'm an animal lover, and I do. And one of the soldiers' diaries that I read, and this was a federal soldier, was talking about seeing this poor three-legged mule standing there for days. One leg had been shot off. I thought, oh, God, poor thing. Yeah. Whoa. And that made me really think about bringing this to light, to make people think, about the suffering of animals. And even robins following the Battle of Stones River. Food was so short, in such short supply, and people were trying to come up with anything they could to feed themselves, their families, and wounded soldiers. And Mr. Smith out on the Manson Pike took a bushel barrel and a big club, and after dark, and he went out and clubbed a whole bunch of robins.
Wow.
And they made, stew. I mean, how many bites do you think a good robin would have?
I don't know, but I bet they were delicious.
You can have my share, Truman.
Now, where?
Please pass the robin.
Tell everybody where the Rutherford County Historical Society is located right now.
Well, we have the Ransom House. Through the generosity of Mr. C.B. Arnett, he donated the Ransom Academy on Academy Street to the Rutherford County Historical Society. That's where our books are now. Our meeting place is still in the archives, the Rutherford County Archives on Rice Street. Mm-hmm. But the Historical Society does own the Ransom Academy, and our books are there. And so we would invite you to become a member of the Historical Society, to come to our meetings, check us out. And when we have an open house or when the Ransom Academy, that's a piece of history too. I grew up on North Spring Street, just one block over, and I remember that old structure when I was a kid. But I'm so glad that has been preserved. That's, something that's another piece of Murfreesboro history that we're fortunate to still have with us, and it's got a story to tell. So,
You guys work directly with the Gore Foundation over at MTSU also.
The Gore Repository. There are some wonderful, wonderful, it's a wonderful, wonderful collection of good stuff. I have some of my research over there. Dr. Bob Womack's research is there, and you just pick an area if you're doing research or interested in something. The folks in the Gore Center are happy to help, and there's just a treasure, a repository of local history.
And it's a continuing treasure because they're constantly taking in more information. it seems like it's just endless, and they have worked extremely hard to preserve that and make it available for the citizens right here in this community.
It is a wonderful, wonderful treasure. I know the 4 years that I was president of the Historical Society, people were calling me all the time, and you know they were cleaning out great grandma's house or Aunt Susie's apartment or whatever, and there were all these treasures. And I got to the point I hated to come home at lunch because I didn't know what was going to be sitting on my back doorstep. You know, there was no repository. Mm-hmm. There was no place to put it. And the Gore Center does not take things. I mean, they don't take objects. They take research and pictures and things like that, which they can digitize. But, you know, they don't want your old musket. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, they don't want the ship, Aunt Sally's shifter
robe. I'll take the musket.
Uh-huh. Me too, or the shifter robe. Yeah. But they don't take things like that. They mm-hmm. don't have the space for it. But, you know, research and pictures, it's great.
And you're right. And when you call it a treasure, it is a treasure.
Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm.
Well, Shirley, it's always glad to have you back.
My pleasure.
Are you presently working on another book?
I'm trying to finish up some projects. I've just finished up an article. I've got another article I've got to write. And so I'm just kind of tying up some loose ends right now. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait for the next one to come out.
Well, you're very kind.
I love reading them.
Thank you.
And we will be back in the morning at 9 o'clock and can't wait to see you guys.
WGNS, Murfreesboro.